Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to welcome you to the Vin Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the fabulously fluoridated capital of Auckland, New Zealand. Fukushima irradiated, and everybody has a part-time job as an incandescent light bulb to help the economy, while the prime sinister John Key and all his Wall Street banker wisdom sells off all our electricity generation and water rights to foreign World Bank affiliated cartel mofos. And the only one place in the New Zealand media where you will hear this kind of information exposing the scumbaggery, it's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Invite your friends, otherwise soon they might be sleeping with the fishes. And my very special guest, Keith Hunter, from ancient-world-mysteries.com, soon to just be simply ancientworldmysteries.com, as it probably should have been in the first place. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's good to be here still. moving on, from what I was saying previously, looking at the static placement then of some of the ancient megalithic structures and how some of the modern facilities by military forces seem to be built into the same matrix, I will say that what I then moved on to, because they're like static placement of facilities, I wanted to see if there was any energetic significance to, essentially sacred geometry, to the ancient measures that we use. And feet, the imperial measure set, feet, inches, fathoms, which is, fathom is 6 feet, and even 6,000 feet, which is a unit measure that I term an ideal geographical mile. All of these measures, they are not arbitrarily selected. They are based upon the Earth's own tropical year, this value to a very exacting standard. You can derive them from that. And I was basically looking at these ancient measures, various mathematical progressions, right? And I was looking to see if you could demonstrate that rather than just have these measures being of significance, tying up the, you know, linking the distances between sites over the Earth and looking at ratios of significance between sites towards the Earth or each other, I wanted to look at whether or not you could link them into physical processes. And this is where the big breakthrough is to be made, looking at nuclear weapons and earthquakes. And I'll just say credit where credit's due, because the pioneer in this particular field is a man called Bruce Cathie, who lives in New Zealand. And three of his books, The Bridge to Infinity, The Energy Grid, and The Harmonic Conquest of Space, which I do have copies of, I bought those about over 10 years ago now, he made a few critical linkages and really showed the way in terms of how this is modelled. And I did vary some of the things that he was doing. But the critical thing, if I'll just show this, is the issue of earthquakes, right? If you go to a geologist, they'll tell you, totally random, you can't predict them, they can occur anywhere, right? Well, that's actually not true. They can be forecast with exceptional precision. And the earthquakes are triggered quite literally due to the position of the moon, the sun, the other planets, right? The configuration of the other celestial bodies relative to the Earth actually triggers the earthquakes. And it's this whole issue of astrology itself. When people say, do the movements of the planets cause natural disasters? The ancients would say yes, resoundingly so. Modern physicists over the past couple of hundred years would say no. In every age but the present, it was accepted that the planets, the sun and the moon, in their patterns relative to the Earth, could affect life on the Earth, especially triggering massive disasters like earthquakes. And it's such a high-precision science. And I'll give you the way you model it basically is as follows. We've got these earthquake databases, right? In many countries, like the USGS, there's one in Australia, these natural hazards databases. And we've got monitoring stations. So when an earthquake occurs, with, you know, quite literally to the nearest second, we register exactly when it occurred, when it first registered, and we've got the latitude and longitude. so we know the precise time down to the nearest second. You can put that into an astronomy package and literally freeze the solar system, right? And what you're looking for, right, we've got the coordinates of the epicenter on the Earth. Once you've got the precise universal time, a date right down to the nearest second, if you draw a straight line from the center of the Earth to the center of another celestial body, say the Sun, right, that line will pierce through the surface of the Earth to give you another on-the-ground coordinate set. And you get this from what we call Greenwich hour angle and also declination. But you do have to modify the declination value from geocentric to geodetic. I don't want to get into technicalities of that. But basically, you're working out the on-the-ground position from a different celestial body, like the Sun or the Moon. And then you've got the coordinates for that, and you can look at them relative to, say, the earthquake epicenter coordinates. And you mentioned just a few moments ago, Fukushima. This is a classic example. It's a brilliant example, in fact, and it demonstrates resonance at work. We know the exact time that the earthquake occurred in Japan, March the 11th, 2011, last year, the 9.01. We've got it at 5 hours, 46 minutes, 24 seconds, universal time. And if you stick that into, say, the Australian government's database, we can work out the precise on-the-ground position of the Sun. And its latitude is about 3.866 degrees south, longitude 95.94 degrees east. And so, again, I've got those very exactingly. I don't want to read off every decimal point, but we've got them very exacting. And we've also got the actual ground position of the coordinates of where the earthquake occurred, just off the eastern coast of Japan. At that precise moment, then, if you use, again, our most advanced ellipsoid model, the WGS model, and work out the arc length connecting up the Sun ground position to the epicenter, right, that arc length fits into the equatorial circumference of the Earth practically dead on 6 times. And if you do the equation, right, and you get the precise answer for the equatorial circumference of the Earth, according to the WGS model, and you use the arc length, as I've just specified, the answer you'll get is something like, I've got it here, I'll read it out, it's 5.99992912, and so forth. It's that level of exactness. And just to put this in perspective, when we talk about earthquakes being triggered, we're talking about the Sun, right, dynamically moving as a point-like position over the surface of the Earth due to the rotation of the Earth. In 1 second of time, the Earth rotates and the Sun would sweep out about 1,500 feet in 1 second. And there are 86,400 seconds in one day. Now, if you did this sum and you took the equatorial circumference of the Earth, right, and you divided it by 6 and then compared it to the answer you get from the calculation, the error rate is about 260 feet or so, right? 260 feet, and in 1 second of time, you sweep out 1,500. It basically tells us that that earthquake occurred with split-second timing. The moment this resonant fit was achieved, in other words, the Earth was struck by an energetic waveform which fits inside the Earth a whole number of times, setting up the standing wave pattern. And this is why the earthquake occurred.
It's kind of like a spirograph in that sense. It's like a wheel that's turning inside a wheel, making a pattern.
Yeah, it is. It's a very dynamic.
Speaking of patterns, I think we have a listener tuning in from Pine Gap at the moment. Like quite literally, that we have a little viewer page map, and there's a regular listener from exactly that region around about Pine Gap. I wonder if it's somebody actually inside the facility, you know, who just needs their daily dose of the Vinny East, which I don't know. Anyway, tangent, sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, the upper echelon matrix, the minute you say echelon, well, Pine Gap's there, isn't it? with regards to the earthquake then, here we've got an example of the earthquake would occur on one of the amplitude points.
Oh, you know what's funny? After I just mentioned that they were listening in from Pine Gap, they just dropped off.
We both know they've gone into silent mode now. They've gone into silent mode. It's surveillance in action.
I think what was funny is there is we were the ones doing the surveillance, or at least noticing that we were being surveilled. I don't know. it's still funny nonetheless. We're coming to break it about it a minute or so. So if you want to wrap up, go ahead.
I was just saying that you've got this fit of six times that wavelength effectively inside the equatorial circumference of the Earth. So the earthquake would occur in one of the amplitude points. And they are precisely targeted, these earthquakes. There are more connections I could give to the Japanese earthquake to really nail it in three dimensions. But the point is, we can forecast with high precision high magnitude earthquakes. And I'll give an example of that after the break before I go into it. But
you're not the first person to be talking about this. I mean, we had a guy in New Zealand, Ken Ring, who was trying to use the moon's movements to predict earthquakes. Allegedly, the moon goes around. And you know how it affects the tide and all of that kind of stuff with its gravitational pull? Well, it turns out that underneath the crust of the Earth is all this liquid magma as well. And as the moon pulls around, that has a tide underneath the surface and can be linked to earthquakes. However, the predictions weren't 100% accurate by any means. Also, we have Sandeo over in the United States developing a system of earthquake prediction by measuring changes in sea level and temperature, which I thought was very interesting. So anybody who says that you can't predict it, I'd say, well, probably there's a few ways, wouldn't you say? We'll be right back after the break at the Vinny Eastwood Show.